Welcome back, everyone. It's September the 16th, 2014, and this is our Clean Network call for that day. So welcome. So are there any announcements from those assembled? Everything quiet?
We're getting ready to do a presentation for the NEOC conference up in Maine the end of October. It's called the Better Together Summit, and it's being presented by the New England Environmental Educators Alliance. And I noticed that there are quite a few people there from the Clean Network and NAAEE, so it's going to be great to catch up with folks up there.
Excellent. So that's in Maine. Where in it? Where in Maine?
It's not far from Freeport, and New Gloucester, I think, is the name of the town.
Yeah, sounds right. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, we all these sort of regional meetings, we certainly need those as we can, and the work is happening in the region.
And who was that mentioned that?
Yeah.
Debbie Fitton.
Oh, okay. Hi, Debbie. I didn't recognize the voice. I'm like, oh, someone in the Northeast. I don't know if you heard our discussion about regions, so I'm thinking, wait, that's someone in the Northeast.
Yeah, that I did hear the conversation.
Be quiet.
Right. So, that's good to know, and I'll keep you in mind as a Northeast person as well, yeah, because we are looking to highlight the different regions of the NCA.
Absolutely.
Just to try to sort of highlight one of the regions each month, I guess, is the kind of plan that Bonnie has. I think that would work out well.
Cool.
Any way we can get this information out to folks.
Right, so, that's the ultimate goal, yeah.
Exactly. That's what we're here for. So I have a couple of announcements because I suspect those on the call have maybe not looked at the schedule page sort of in the last 10 minutes because I've changed a few things. Next week, we had Gail Scowcroft scheduled from the actual title of the organization is. This is the Climate Education Partnership Alliance. Is that the right, the new title? I can't quite remember now. I'm just looking at it. National Change Education Partnership Alliance, so CSEP. I guess it is. I don't know what the acronym is, how it's said. But Gail was going to present next week, and unfortunately she had to cancel. And we're actually trying to schedule a presentation from Andrea, and Andrea may well be on the call right now, and we're trying to schedule something probably for mid-November. So that's a bit of a change for next week for these calls. But in the meantime, and it's been kind of lurking up there in the ether, Mark McCaffrey has been wanting to do a presentation on his new book, and it turns out that the 23rd is actually the launch date, and he's agreed to do a presentation about some of the material in that book. And as some of you may know, this is a book he's been working on for a while, and it actually highlights a lot of work that we have been doing as a network. So certainly the Clean collection is mentioned, and a lot of our sort of thinking that certainly Mark has been a deep part of in terms of, as the book calls it, Climate Smart and Energy Wise, the whole sort of climate science and sort of solutions that are energy-based, that sort of mix that we've all been exploring for many years. So that book is coming out, and Mark is going to give us a bit of a presentation, a kind of overview of the material in the book, and hopefully it's going to be very helpful for people. So that's a bit of a change for next week's presentation on the 23rd. And then everything is sort of still the same through October. So I just wanted to mention that. Any questions or comments? It's a quiet crowd this morning. So I guess the other thing that I have been sort of looking at is, and I don't know how much everyone else follows this, this is a huge week in climate change politics. If you're tracking, you know that there's a report that just came out literally in the last 2 hours on the new climate economy that was developed by a number of internationally known economists and several, I think mostly former leaders of government. So this is a pretty major policy announcement and sort of action plan. I've just started skimming it. That just came out. I think it'll have some interesting repercussions because it's clearly intended for decision makers, and this is where the push needs to happen, is on the decision making stuff. And as I guess the rest, you know that what we're coming up towards next week is the big summit at the UN in New York, and it's going to be interesting how the politics of that play out. So I'm sure the timing of this report is not by accident, to make sure that this is part of the conversation that happens next week in New York. And of course, there is also a large climate change march, I guess, in Washington, if I remember correctly.
No, it's in New York.
Oh, it's in New York, is it? Oh, thanks, Frank.
New York on Sunday.
Yeah, on Sunday on the 21st. So that will focus a lot of attention to that area, too. So that's really important. Frank, do you have any other stuff around all this? Because as even my email this morning to you, this is a pretty big week in this whole, the politics of all of this.
Right. There's the small p politics and the big p politics.
Absolutely.
In all of this. But The thing, just to go back to the new economy, climate economy piece, Scott, have you seen anything regarding the kind of, usually it's where our work closely comes into this is in a communications piece in these types of documents. But they usually forget that, in order to have a new economy, you have a new workforce, and usually education and training have something to do with training and workforce, and then there's the role of citizenry engaging in transitioning from one economy to another economy, which is the other part of our work. But, is there anything in there that you see as a door to using
I
seem to have lost sound. Is anyone else still on the call?
I'm sorry, what was that? Hello?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure who that was.
I'm not sure. It sounded like she said something about she thought she lost sound for the conference call.
I can hear you too.
Yeah, we're fine here. Frank, I'm just going through, in response to your question, the 10 points that are at the end of the report. There's nothing even about training. Interesting. Scale-up innovation is probably as close as we can get from it. Phase out subsidies. A lot of them are government policies, agreements, strategic decision-making. That's maybe the closest we can get to something that might be related to education and training. So, I think the thing that we notice so often, there's not an education and training component to any of this. It is kind of divorced from what I think most of us agree are pretty significant drivers of this kind of change.
So, perhaps, I'm not sure if the Clean Network has woken up from its summer, off, but, I'm thinking that perhaps that piece of the, because, if we're talking long-term societal change, which is what we are talking about, in order to, deal with the opportunities and challenges that climate change presents, then clearly we're going to have to make a more compelling case for the big stuff, where this intersects with education and training and public engagement and all that kind of stuff. And these documents just one after another come out, and, we always fall on the floor. And, we're half of cities' budgets, all across the nation.
Yep.
And, mayors and governors have to spend a lot of time on education, and yet the connections just continue to be missed.
Yeah.
One after
and
the
I,
next.
And I, there's the other report that came out, I don't know if it was yesterday or which Price Cooper, whatever the other part of it is, but the accountants and their whole assessment of all of this, I haven't looked at that to see whether there was an education component to their assessment. That was also kind of interesting. they start figuring as accountants, and as many others have figured out, this is not a good idea to go down the path we're going right now. So that's another one to check to see whether there's an educational component to that, and hence some other folks to lobby and say this is an important part of what you're talking about.
Well, but I think the I don't actually put much stock in the lobby piece. It's maybe you didn't mean it that way, but it's more that the investments that are going to come in this area are going to come either from the education community with partners from the philanthropic, other entities investing in this. I don't see federal dollars coming into this space anytime soon. In any significant way. That doesn't mean we don't have a role, just it means we're not going to be the ones who fund it. But that said, I think we still have to make a very compelling case of what we bring to the table at scale, which is, millions of educators and, 74.6 million students in the nation that, with a multi-decadal issue.
Well, I think the lobby part, that it doesn't necessarily mean I'm associated with it. It is in some ways exactly what we're doing with the National Climate Assessment. It's saying, folks, we're out here, and you do need to include education and training. So it's not send money, but it is make sure that we're in part of that conversation, because we are part of the conversation, whether either implicitly or explicitly. If you leave us out, then you're missing an enormous part of the sort of strategies or the energy for change in this case. So, when I think of lobbying, I also think of it in terms of that too. But you're absolutely right that we're not going to see federal dollars in these things until there's some pretty major changes in Washington.
Right. Just one other thing that one of the reports that I've been digging into, Scott, just to put this frame, and then we move on if you like. Or others want to go deeper, is in the National Climate Assessment, toward the back, there's a section on response options. And in there, there's actually very strong language that calls for the stuff that we could do in there as part of the long-term response options. But that came independent of us, which is great when somebody does it, but it's definitely buried and very few people are paying attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's language out there.
Yeah.
But I guess just a question to those on the call, and maybe we need to think about it wider, is, where is that, economy, education economy research base that says that education, mm-hmm. when you're talking about response options and opportunities for climate change and the energy economy, where's that case being mm-hmm. made that is compelling? Yeah. And I think that all of us benefit from having access to those reports and those findings. So it's an open call.
I think that's a great way of thinking of it is who's the advocate for education and all of this. Obviously educators, but I think, are educators sitting at the tables, of the folks who are drafting or even setting up the elements that will be in these kind of reports, clearly that's not been happening. So there's no sort of chamber of commerce for education that is getting to sit at these tables. And that's certainly something to think about. It actually does sound like a Department of Education role, but that's not.
I wouldn't see that. I'm thinking it's going to come more from governors or, it might come from, business leaders who have a very long-term interest. It's hard to say, but there might be academics who are doing think tank analysis or something like that. But, transition in economies, usually education, when you're talking something big like that for a long time, you go to education, just like we did with the Sputnik response. I can't remember the name of the act, but they led with education back in the 60s, in the 50s. So we seem to not do that this time, and that seems to be a missing out.
that's an interesting question of how did education sort of fall off the table here, you know, and not be considered an essential part of all of this. Any other thoughts from other folks? I don't want this to be the Frank and Scott show.
Maybe it is the Frank and Scott show.
No,
I know bodies out there.
Interesting.
Well, it's an interesting question, I think, for us as a network, you know, and I know I've raised this, is education enough? Are we really needing to play in these other realms? And I'm increasingly feeling like we need to, and whether it's making sure that education is sitting at the table or it is moving into forms of advocacy that may not, you know, be something that we can be doing on a professional, but certainly can be doing on a personal level. When I see these new reports come out, the Audubon in the last 2 weeks, as Frank said, sort of the succession of reports that we've been seeing, my sort of nervousness, just is going up and up and up in terms of the kinds of impacts we're already seeing and how is that going to get played out in so many areas of our lives. So. It's hard to be patient, I guess, is where I'm getting.
Right, but Scott, we should always remember that the sneaky thing that showed up in the space is the renewable package for meeting our energy demand and electric cars showing up and that are really robust and capable. There's a whole series of other activities that have shown up that really the climate policy, climate science community didn't ask for, but
yes.
Here they are. And when we look at it, it's a godsend actually that these things happened seemingly conveniently without us actually intentionally doing it. Now maybe we set these things in motion in the 70s and 80s. Early 80s, at least, here it is that solar and wind could play an incredibly large portion of the space, and so that innovation thing is happening right before our eyes.
Right,
but it doesn't mean it couldn't be catalyzed.
Well,
and a lot of that's coming out of schools.
It's the classic question, are there policies or incentives that should be in place? And so this is very much government kind of stuff, but are there things that allow that to happen? And I don't know whether that's something that we as a group of educators and scientists, whether that's something that we look at, but I think we can inform that and say, we are seeing, the change in greenhouse gas emissions and the amount of CO2 that we're seeing in the atmosphere continues to go up. We may not be seeing that in surface temperature, but we're certainly seeing the impact of, or we're seeing the very direct measurement of CO2 in the atmosphere. We know that's important. How does that play out in all these other areas then? I think that's the push that we can be making, whether it's in the classrooms or in other forums, I guess. That's where I'm going.
Well, I'm also thinking about some of the stuff that either Dan Kahan or others, where
mm-hmm.
if you don't see the solutions as a real possibility that meets your values, then
mm-hmm.
you're kind of stuck. The more we keep on talking about all these problems, you're kind of stuck. With, well, what are we going to do that actually makes a difference, that matters, that's commensurate to the size of the problem? That's what I'm trying to get at is that's real stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
Frank, I'd like to go back to your point about tying in education. That was a really good point. And using Sputnik as an example, I'm thinking back to that time, and the push in education came from the White House. That's where we got our whole STEM focus that we're still seeing flourish in schools today.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if this isn't something that has to come from the White House. I really haven't seen the White House reach out and involve education in this initiative. and it's possible I missed that, but that's what I'm thinking. Isn't that where this push would have to come from?
Well, so, I mean, hopefully, I'm hearing you. So we are in discussions to see, you know, whether or not that's something that we could do, because the STEM initiatives have always struck me as STEM for what? It's always been the squishy, fuzzy, you know, robots and lab coats kind of STEM. And okay. It's not been STEM for the most pressing issue that humanity will face for the next century and beyond. That's the things that STEM can bring to bear in really powerful and meaningful ways for me. I mean, this is me personally speaking. So, you know, that's possible. But I think that it's also, it's not just the White House, which only has, this White House only has 2 years. So it's kind of like, what's the coalition of interested parties that would really push for this? You know, it's got to have a business, you know, major philanthropic kind of consortium, or else it's not going to get past this White House into the next White House and the one after that and the one after that and beyond. So, you know, I'm initiating it out of this White House is possible, but going beyond, you know, is going to take a bigger coalition of people who really get, I mean, you know, I would imagine Bill Gates at some level, if you sat down with him, you would probably get what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as far as I know, no one on the call has the ability to have a meeting with Bill Gates.
But even Bill Gates wouldn't have the ability to push this initiative into education.
Well,
right? I mean, he could within his own means. Yeah. I mean, he could within his own means, but to get it into education has to come from the White House. That's where the states get their decree, if you will, as to what has to be in their curriculum.
Well, right, but there's
I don't see any way around that.
Well, I think one of the geniuses of the Next Generation Science Standards, it was states, not federal. And I think that making progress with states that are already moving in the direction with the Next Generation Science Standards, and bringing it down to the governor's level, probably, and we at the federal level are in a support role, not in a leadership role. I know it's a little bit more chaotic, but I think that if I had to guess, that's probably more where the action is over the near term.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And I mean, I would think, you know, Governor Inslee in Washington State, or O'Malley, who's almost up in Maryland, or, you know, so on. These are people that really are much closer to education implementation than the White House. And I think that there's, you know, especially the Common Core issues and, you know, strong-arming states and states' rights and all that fun conversation, that it makes it more important. But if we're really going to do this, you would need a larger enterprise of people to coordinate that kind of effort across states as opposed to national. But I think that that's where the momentum is going to come out of. That's just my personal call. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was Bonnie. Is that you?
It was Bonnie, yes, Frank. Yeah, yeah, and that's a very valid point. States individually can form education initiatives. And so it very well could come from that place. Yeah, I think that or the White House is one of the two alternatives, yeah. Because the nice thing about the White House is they can push an initiative nationwide as they did with STEM. You know, and basically they push it through their funding. You know, when they fund it, the states adopt it. So
I think
it can happen that way, but it can also happen from the state level with the governors as well, yeah.
But you know, maybe one way of looking at it, Bonnie, is that the things that are, you know, if you're talking about training students on how to install renewable energies and monitor them and you know, maintain them at scale and all that, and the financing, whatever it is, right? That's not an issue that's unique to Virginia or North Carolina or Tennessee or so on, right? I mean, there are transferability things, but the specific implementations are more state level. So, you know, I think that the thing I'm appreciating about the next gen style is that it's you know, you're doing it at the state within the context of what the state does, but then the thing that I always try and help here is that you have the ability to work across with efficiency and coordination and mutual benefits, but still, you know, respecting the educational focus at the state level. You know what I mean? And I think that the question for us is, if we were going to do something in the climate energy space, what are those activities that really make a difference, where investments of time and energy and dollars would really make a difference for you know, states that are choosing to move in this direction? I don't think we have that list of activities that would really make that difference. I think that's a question for our community.
Yeah,
I know,
I
don't
know
that
list. Yeah, mm-hmm. You're right. That's a good question.
And it, you know, it certainly sounds like a topic that we could look at in some way. Huh.
Well, you know, and Mark McCaffrey at NCSC, Mark's not on the call, I imagine. But, I mean, we had that meeting there to begin this, that process. But, you know, I don't think we've necessarily all agreed that the list of things that are really catalytic and smart and, you know, valuable have, you know, we've all kind of gotten a handle on them or who could actually do them. We've done a lot of the innovation of this, but, you know, I think, I don't know how we get there. Some of us have talked about summits where we sit down and bring us all together and, you know, who's going to fund that? I don't know. But, you know, taking our work to the next level, I guess is, you know, it just seems like something that the community is starting to bubble up again.
Yeah, and sadly, we're back to the question of funding, right? That always becomes a huge stumbling block.
Well, but what would we fund? I mean, I think, you know, the funders are going to want to know what makes you sure that this is going to have the impact that we all agree should happen. You know, what are the things that we all could get behind and help make happen? You know, what's the funding is the issue, but what's the thing that would be funded and that we would rally behind to get funded?
Right. Identifying those initiatives first would be a good place to start, yeah.
Exactly. And then we could excite people who have the funds and the wherewithal to actually make them happen.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody's got a pocket full of these ideas, it's, you know, good to go, you know, speak up.
Well, it's interesting.
Well, I liked your suggestion about the wind energy or the solar energy. You know, I think they're very good places to start.
Especially because it's connected to jobs.
Yep.
And, you know, I've seen some really interesting NSF-funded grants where they've really focused on, like, taking the wood shop that's in a lot of high schools and turning it into a maker space that really is focused on renewables and green roofs and solar installations and next-generation panel designs and spray-on solar, you know, innovations and, you know, road solar, that crazy idea. You know, you get a group of students at a high school, undergraduate, graduate level focused on this stuff, mm-hmm. you're going to have some interesting things happen. And they're going to start up businesses and, you know, that's kind of how this stuff could roll out.
Yeah, and,
anyway,
you know, there are a lot of initiatives like that, right? Because, just for example, Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University has a huge club that works on a solar car, and every year they perfect it a little more and enter it into a contest, and that's just one small example. But these initiatives kind of already exist, right? Or maybe
sure.
Building from them?
Yeah. You got the solar decathlon with, you know, out of Department of Energy, but that's, you know, where did that go? There's, you know, there's a lot of these pieces, but they've never been put together as a kind of a program of programs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's...
Yeah, and you mentioned they have a career piece, which is true. The career piece is powerful. They also fit into the current STEM initiative because they're a way of doing integrated STEM, having the science, technology, engineering, and math all work together to accomplish the goal.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So that's a new perspective,
well,
too.
You know, it's almost like, you know, the classic problem is people have, a great idea and you know, even can demonstrate that it works, but actually getting it to market, that's the big transition. In some ways, we're in the same place. There's lots of interesting ideas, including these kinds of, retrofit your wood shop kind of things in individual high schools. But to get those from, you know, the solar challenge kinds of events to something where we're seeing impact in industry, you know, and it could certainly be a transfer of those students with those new STEM skills into those companies. But how do you sort of move more of the entrepreneurial class in all of this stuff? How do we make those kind of things, link them into the entrepreneurial class? Because I think that's really what we're saying here. How do we do that? Is it a role for us to make these ideas more, you know, better known?
Well, I'll tell you one surefire thing that absolutely has to happen for our community is we need a backbone organization.
Yeah.
Right now, you know, Scott, you're pro bono for the most part, and Tamara's pro bono for the most part, and
yep.
I'm pro bono for the most part, and, you know, all of us are just doing this out of the goodness of our heart because we're
yep.
true believers, but that's not the way you staff work.
No.
And, you know, I mean, I think if we were ever going to get there, we would have to have much more organizational capability in order to you know, focus and implement and leverage and move out. But, you know, as long as we're all kind of in that donated space, you know, there's like a chicken and egg thing, right? I mean, how do you get the money to do that?
Right.
You know, in order to have what the vision is, and you need them to have the vision. You know, it's just, you know, we're in an innovation space. We haven't figured out how to get to the next level.
Yes, exactly.
So
exactly.
That's kind of the challenge, I feel.
And we're back to the funding issue, and, you know, pretty classic.
Again, right? Yeah.
Well, but, you know, I mean, I think I think one thing, Scott, in all fairness to our community, is that we are beginning to realize all the work we've done on collective impacts and really, you know, we've had probably 7 major meetings where we've talked about all the pieces of this across NCSE and the other NCSE, AGU, you know, and so on. So I think we're thinking along these lines. It's not accelerated. Because we just don't, you know, and if a funder came in and said, sit down and figure this all the way out, get everybody at a convenient place and just, you know, work it till you're done.
Yeah.
You know, that would pay people for their time.
Thanks. You know,
right. Well, that gives hope. That does give hope, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to ask if anything has ever been discussed relative to funding through the utilities. Because right now, the service benefits charges on the utility bills, on electric bills, go to fund, for instance, you know, energy efficiency programs. If there was some kind of push on a state or federal level to also fund climate change, climate education initiatives through programs, you know, such as that, it would seem that the utilities would be a perfect place to get that funding from.
Well, as long as we find, you know, I think there's a group of us in the community who have said, you know, this is where we need to go. We just never really found the avenue to get to the next level. So, you know, that's a great idea. You know, I think, but maybe it's just we're all so busy with our own things, we haven't ever really stuck our head up long enough to take what you just said and actually get it out there.
Hmm.
That's a great idea.
I'm just pulling it out of the sky.
Well, I just think it sort of gets to that whole question of what's the nature of the needs that are there that are not being met that we can do from a training and education perspective. Is there a need for a lot of folks who are trained in STEM to do, just to use the utility thing, perhaps for installing wind and solar capacity, but under the umbrella of a utility, a centralized utility? Is there a role there? Is renewable energy so deeply decentralized? Is it antithetical to a power utility? I don't know. My sense is there certainly are utilities that are very much invested in all that, and certainly there's many here in the Northwest that certainly use an enormous amount of renewable energy. So, own wind farms and all that kind of stuff. So I can kind of see that there are some utilities, especially publicly owned utilities, that are very open to all of that stuff. So, you know, is that a role for us to say, yeah, we've really focused on K-12 education for a long time. And there are folks who are interested in college, university stuff. Should we be looking at the training part of it? Is this a way for us to start to identify what are the gaps in education, what's the nature of the kinds of programs that are needed to really grasp the challenge of renewable energy and climate change? I don't know. I'm not looking
Scott,
for new work. But
what about this as an idea of how to take what you just said? Is, you know, some of the interesting modeling that we've been doing at NOAA about, you know, renewable energy potential and price point and all that stuff, looking at, you know, the classic statements that are made, you know, renewables is never going to be more than 10% of the energy demand, you know, production in the nation, that kind of stuff, which we've found out to be completely incorrect. And so what we're now starting to see is something in the order of 80% renewables by 2040 at no more expense than what we spend a year right now. In fact, it could be cheaper. So you can make that transition with all cars electrified, something like that, right? So, but then you start rolling that back, and it's mostly land-based wind and solar that get you there. A little bit of hydro and so on. But, you know, if you were going to do something like that, how many panels is that have to actually be installed over the next 26 years? And who's going to do that many panels? And, like, how much does one person install a panel per day? And then you start, like, well, where are you going to get – how many wind turbines is that? And, you know, who's going to do that? And, you know, what are all the associated job pieces? And then, you know – and then that's not even talking about adaptation and all the work that's going to go on and preventing storm surge damages and elevating buildings and all that fun stuff. So, they're all real jobs.
And are we, you know, even as an education community or training community, even getting some sense of what that might look like? I think that's a really interesting question. Because it's really easy from a policy point of view and says, oh, well, we'll install so much solar energy capacity, and no one really figures out, you know, we just hope it works out. That's kind of like the free market system that we also have in education. We just hope those things work out. Now, most countries kind of don't do that because you recognize that you really need incentives to make sure that you're training the workers to do the kind of work that you expect. So maybe there's a bit of work for us to do.
But also the public works approach, right, which is what we're kind of talking about, who funds and all that stuff, it's not a matter. It's not a federal thing necessarily. But if you went that route, I mean, you want to send the signals about 10 to 20 years ahead of when you want those people in place. Because middle school to, you know, working without a college degree is 6. You know, with a college degree, that's 10. You know, kindergarten to college degree is 16. You know, I mean, it takes a while for those things to take place.
Exactly.
And so you have to get ahead of them. And if we're talking 26 years, then you're starting to get into the space where you're not talking about trivial amounts of effort here, but that's kind of what's before us.
That's right.
It is absolutely what's before us, actually.
Of goals for 2030 or 2040, you're having to have a 20-year plan in terms of having workers and expertise to make that do those kind of installations and repair work or whatever infrastructure.
It's a huge enterprise of activity, but I've never seen anybody kind of lay out that plan for us, and maybe that's what if the new climate economy is going to be what that is, then if they don't think about what we're talking about, then they've missed the boat. But we're used to that.
Bring us right back to that report, and you're absolutely right. This is all fine and good, but how does that actually happen? And it's not going to happen without education and training.
Right, exactly. But I mean, but I think if we actually, one of the things when we've talked with foundations over the years is they're like, so can you give us the 100K and 10 kind of target? You know, we need 100,000 new excellent STEM teachers in 10 years. Well,
yeah.
We don't have that kind of, you know, what's the target that we're contributing to? And
mm-hmm.
I think
mm-hmm.
that if they really wanted something big and beefy to invest in,
mm-hmm.
we're going to have to kind of come up with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and this is all in line with conversations we've had many, 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 many times. So we've
exactly.
never kind of focused it down to something that we would all go, yeah, that's brilliant. Let's do it.
No, it's true. I think part of it is that as educators, we tend not to think quite like that. We're much more focused on what are we going to do today. And even those of us who don't teach in classrooms, we're still trying to figure out how do we support the teachers that are trying to figure out what to do today. This is a much more long-term kind of thing. It's actually much more economic and sort of policy-oriented than traditionally educators think about it. But there's nobody in that space. As we've seen, the policy and decision makers do not include education in the reports they do, in, you know, in big flashy presentations and all this. They don't think about that. So it is my sense it's actually our responsibility, and a point I made before is we need to make sure that we're at those tables that are putting these reports together, or at least the specs for them, and make this case that it's all fine and good, such and such, but if we don't build the capacity for the folks to do that work, this will never happen. You cannot bring that many people in from an immigration perspective to do that kind of work. This is the classic STEM stuff. And we see here in Washington State where, you know, we have enormous need for STEM educated people, and we certainly can't in-house generate that. We just simply don't have the capacity to graduate that many people with STEM education.
But you know, I think, Scott, it would also be fair to say that when we talk about STEM, you know, we haven't totally talked about the full STEM workforce in the context of the previous conversation about how many, I mean, just think about solar.
Mm-hmm.
What are all the jobs that relate to solar, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, we're talking about high power lines, we're talking about clips, we're talking about manufacturing, we're talking about transport, we're talking about installing, we're talking about blah, 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 blah. I'm not
exactly.
a solar guy, so I'm just making it up as I go here. But you know, I mean, that's...
Line. Needs herbicides to, you know, keep weeds down. I mean, there's a whole kind of long list of things that one adds that are all part of this package. Not to focus on herbizides, but yeah. Absolutely.
But you need all of them, and then you need
yeah.
a lot more of them than we currently are, and they don't necessarily all get, you know, all the degrees and that, you know, we're not talking about people who go to Harvard always.
Right.
By any stretch of imagination, but you get my point is that the ability to characterize that, and in all fairness, you know, Governor O'Malley, when he put out the Smart Coast initiative, he put an education and outreach component in that initiative. So
yeah.
it happens sometimes. Maybe let's
yeah.
give
okay.
some
That's
of them
great.
Credit sometimes,
yeah.
but it doesn't
and
always happen.
You mentioned Inslee here in Washington State, and yes, of course, he's certainly somebody who understands the education component of this, but it's still a we don't see a whole lot of it on the ground, is what it boils down to. It's tricky. Yeah. So any other thoughts on all of this stuff? This is just high-level stuff. But it's...
Hey,
from my perspective, what it helps me is as the events of the next week play out, because I think this is going to be a pretty important sort of political a week in climate change, I think it's really helpful with this discussion to think about, okay, where's the education component in all of this stuff, and to keep asking that question. And that will be a pretty interesting way to view some of the pronouncements I'm sure we're going to hear, especially next week. And how hollow they are, or how substantial they are.
Well, I think one other thing you asked me before about, you know, the other things, the bigger one I think that's sitting on our horizon than those is actually the COP21 meeting.
Exactly.
And I am aware that the Article 6 component of COP21 is starting to show up as more and more important, which is education, training, and public outreach. And I'm part of the federal team for the U.S. that relates to that. And, you know, we're hearing the French are very interested in a major, you know, climate change education initiative surrounding COP21. But, you know, we'll see. But, you know, that's to be determined. But I think that it's going to come through those channels more than it's going to come through, you know, all the conversations about the climate People's March is very social media and, you know, public engagement heavy. And then what? You know?
Exactly.
And then the other piece is, you know, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, does that suggest that our focus really should be on COP21 as opposed to some of these sort of more local U.S.-based kinds of initiatives? It's the United Nations, of course, but is that really where our focus should be, especially since you have a role in some of that? To turn it around, are there things that we can be doing that will be helpful for you?
Well, I think the main – well, yeah, always. I think the main piece is that in the United States, we don't make progress at national very often anymore.
No.
We it's an aggregate of state and local and municipal, as opposed to federal. Until that changes, that's pretty much where the action is. It's always been. And you know, you mentioned Governor Inslee, and he's actively looking at a cap and trade partnership with California and Oregon. And really, you know, contributing to, you know, they're making things happen on the West Coast, and things are happening in the Northeast, and things are happening in the Great Lakes region, and, you know, and so on. But, you know, I think that we make progress where we can, and we collaborate internationally where it makes sense, and we report out on our successes that are unique to our country. That's the only viable way in the near term until we get some major signals at a national level that we can all, you know, gravitate around. But that just isn't where we are at the moment. You know, maybe the next president will be able to have a different Congress and a different political mood and make different progress. But, you know, that doesn't mean we're not going to make sizable progress. And maybe the, you know, when people talk about the innovations of the states is you innovate at the states and then you see what works and then you transfer, you know, across the nation. So I think our prime drivers are what can we do at the state level that really makes a difference in this space, and then, you know, what works and how do we scale that, you know, to other regions or even nationally if that's possible. I think that's the right way to go about this, and COP21 is kind of where we have the most traction connecting education and training and public outreach to climate change response, much more than these other initiatives.
Well,
so, you know, I mean, and that's December of next year, so it's not that far away, guys.
So, but does that suggest that one thing that could be, you know, it's a major project, but we could be identifying those kinds of things that are really kind of interesting that it's happening at the state level from an education and training perspective, and that's something that, you know, goes forward to COP21. Now, it would be very interesting if it went as a federal contribution. I'm sure there are lots of NGOs that will be doing somewhat similar kinds of things to be making that point, is that there are things that we can be doing rather than just simply trying to put together a global agreement of some form. Would that be useful for us to really start to identify those kinds of things?
Absolutely. And I emphasize that we are doing as opposed to we could
do. We do those things. And there's many members on our network that, you know, are connected to those projects either directly or indirectly, and just simply starting to identify them, but also, I think, sort of categorize them or, you know, characterize them in a way that suggests how to transfer them from one place to the other. What are the things that are particularly unique about their implementation in a particular region, or what are the things that are general? And it's, you know, obviously, you know, wind technology is pretty global, certainly national, But there may be things that are very specific around, I mean, solar, for example. We do a huge amount of solar here in Seattle, and it's of a different form than it would be in Tucson, just because of the amount of sun we have. We just need bigger arrays, essentially. We still get lots of sun, especially this summer. I just kind of wonder whether, you know, that would be useful to start to build together. And in some ways, it's not too dissimilar to what we did with the regional reports around the NCA. We started identifying learning resources, but now we're sort of, I guess what I'm seeing is that let's look at what are the kinds of programs that are out there, whether it's a training program in a community college, or incentive programs or whatever it is. What are the various other things that are related to training and education that are helping in terms of climate change policy and implementation?
You know, Scott, maybe something that would be possible for the network, given who we are and what we do, is to actually just kind of develop a case study template. And then just let everybody at whatever level they're working are aware of share case studies that are somehow, I mean, we've talked about a couple different models that would frame them together. I mean, there's clearly K-12, there's clearly, you know, colleges, there's place-based, there's informal, there's training, there's public education, I mean, community education. And, you know, so there's like types of case studies. But we've really never got, I mean, we hear them at AGU all the time. You know, just one, or we hear them on this listserv, or we hear them, you know, on the telecons, or somebody introduces something that is amazing, like the Clio project, or, you know, the stuff that Kristen's doing in Wilsteger, or the stuff that ACE is doing. They're case studies. They're stories of programs doing things that make a difference. And if we were able to put together a series of case studies, then we could really see, capture the imagination and make a compelling case more effectively.
And maybe that's, you know, it's just some web pages on our website.
Absolutely.
You know, not only identifying sort of learning resources, but these kind of programs and initiatives and that, and just saying, yeah, we see that as part of what we're doing.
You know, actually, it comes perfectly around to, we had talked about the major projects pages on the Clean Network.
Yes.
And maybe the case studies is the best way that each of the, just do it in a consistent way so it's not jarring if you jump from one to the next. But that could be really interesting. Bonnie, what do you think about that? I mean, imagine you guys have got a bunch of stories that are coming out through NICE.
Each one of our projects would have that as part of our reporting. Yeah, each one of the projects would have that as part of their reporting. In fact, as they do their analysis, their three-year analysis, I would think their case study would be interesting to look at in that space.
Yeah, I mean, but the target audience isn't the program officer. It's an external audience, so you would have to put a little extra time in. But it's a way of you putting your shingle out in a way that's compelling.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe even just looking at the reach that they've had. You know, was one funding organization, and the project that they were doing was this and such, you know, but what reach did they have? Looking at the social network that they created and who they've involved in their project might be interesting as well.
Well, you know, that's kind of what I'm getting into about the template. If we kind of just took one, for example, and said, let's make, you know, or one per each of the types of education or types of, you know, whatever. And the Trace Catalog offers us some structures to help us with this already. But, you know, that would help us kind of make reach is a thing that everybody would have to talk about their reach in whatever way they felt was appropriate, or they all had to talk about partners. Who were their partners? Or was your target audience? You know, who was your funder? How did you get this done? Did you have in-kind? You know, there's a couple of things that I think would be nice if everybody kind of handled the same way. And that way you could lay it out on the page in a consistent way.
Yeah. And to be clear that your audience is not, fellow educators or researchers, but really the general public and decision makers. and the kind of questions that, that perhaps they would ask of these kind of projects. I think that'd be really interesting too.
Well, Scott, go ahead. Well, one thing I can definitely say is that whatever template we come up with, you know, we should engage the Environmental Grant Makers Forum leaders or the Blue Sky Funder Forum leaders, so that's about environmental education, or other philanthropic funding groups, and maybe the federal PIs, and say, you know, if we did this and we told these stories in a consistent, you know, way, would you as a funder find this, would it answer the questions or excite you or help you learn the things you would want to know if you were excited about funding a type of project like this? You know, and to get that from them before we go out and wholesale ask everybody to, I mean, we're never going to get a full consensus of every, you know, census of everybody. But we'd get a good representation from all the projects or types of projects.
That opens up an interesting element, back to funding, is if we could do this well, it may excite some of the philanthropic organizations saying, oh, we'd like to do that kind of project that you're doing in the Southwest. We'd like to do that in the Northeast because that's our focus. That, you know, you just never quite know what it could generate. And I guess it also goes back to something that I was alluded to earlier, and that is we have lots of projects that we do one of, funded, you know, the thing gets done, and we don't know how to scale it up because there's really no group to do that. One thing about putting a website like this, we're basically saying, okay, you know, web universe, whatever, out there, here are some ideas that you could develop, and I quite like that notion. I mean, it would be great if what happens is that we get a lot of social innovators to come and look at the website. I mean, I think of things like the Buckminster Fuller Institute, Bucky Challenges, where these very interesting projects get kind of quite a bit of publicity, a little bit of money, and then people look at them and say, oh, I can see how I could do that in my region or in my company. So that could be very interesting, a very interesting role for us to play.
So, I mean, I'm struggling on. We've talked about at the tri-agency meetings of engaging philanthropic groups to, you know, grow the pool of interested people to extend our considerable federal investments in this space. So that this is totally in line with the wider initiatives, and we are making inroads into the philanthropic organizations in this space, and I'm fairly confident that climate continues to grow as a major priority for you know, people who are in the philanthropic corporate foundation space. And it'll only, and just to be clear, that's only going to go up. As time goes on, more and more of this is going to be needed. We have to be visionaries here because, we're not going to be responsive. We're going to be proactive. Because that's not happening right now. But, I mean, you see some of our projects, like Ed Maybach's project. He kept going through philanthropic funds, and other members of our community have done that. I know ACE has figured out some new interesting funding models that take their projects to the next level and so on. So this is not without precedent.
Yeah.
And maybe that's one of the pieces of the template is, you know, what's the – how confident are you in your knowledge to scale?
Right.
Where are you in the development life cycle of a project, right? From R&D to, you know, whatever project life, you know, the life of a project is, are you ready to scale kind of question? You know,
As asking the question, has your project ever been replicated? Has anyone adapted this for use in another, you know, region or sector? Just to say, yeah, this has got legs. someone else has also viewed it this way. That could be very intriguing. Well,
so what do we do, Scott?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Where do we start? We've designed an elephant, right? That could solve the problem, but where do we start to eat the elephant? Yes, that's where my mind's going.
Well, Rick's right about the template. If we, you know, said, okay, what are the, you know, 7 or 8 questions that we think the audience would like to know, this audience of philanthropic and the general public and maybe decision makers, what are the questions we think they might like to know of these projects that have been funded? And then I think, as Frank suggested, we also then test those questions with exactly that audience and say, would this be useful for you to know about these kinds of projects?
And extend that a little further. Scott, I would also say, you know, let's look at the metadata fields in the trace catalog as,
yes,
you know, how much of those can we use exactly as they are so we can leverage that data and pre-populate the templates and then expand them to projects that are not in the trace catalog. You know, there are projects that are out there that are in the germane but are not in the trace catalog. And, you
right,
know, project
because
data
the trace catalog
is
very specific.
Right, because the trace catalog is just NOAA and NSF. So
exactly.
That's,
and it's not,
you know, if you're
all
wanting
NASA,
to see all the projects are out there.
Right.
Right, but remember, Bonnie, it's not all of NASA, and it's not all of NOAA, and it's not all of NSF projects that are germane. It's there's still a wider, not a diminishing returns, but still a wider set of activities that are out
right
there that are beyond this.
Yeah.
It, just
yeah,
out of curiosity, Bonnie, is
mm-hmm,
is the GLOW program in the trace catalog?
Yeah.
It's not funded by NASA, NOAA, or NSF.
Yes, it is.
What about
it's funded by NASA?
We, you
no,
know,
it's
we have
not
projects.
I mean, there are elements of GLOW that are used in NASA projects, but the GLOW program itself is not a NASA program. It wasn't created with NASA funding.
Right.
The main funding for the GLOW program is now NASA and a little bit of NSF. I mean, we put something like $30 million into it from NOAA back in the day, and
right,
NSF's put a fair,
mm-hmm,
you know, I mean, but it's still the biggest funder right now in the U.S. is NASA. But my larger point here is that it is completely related to climate and energy literacy, but it is a project,
correct,
that is not,
mm-hmm,
sitting in this space. In the trace catalog, but could. And so, you know, they would have to add more metadata. But, you know, I think that there's a lot of pieces that we've already kind of done out there. Let's not rethink those things.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
How about we do
it's
this,
Scott?
It's
not purposeful to reinvent the wheel. Yeah.
And it may
we
well
just
be
choose
that we could make the argument that we'd like to expand TRACE, TRACE is not that old, and, you know, it's quite possible that you put a meta field in, you know, who's the major funder, so that covers the existing folks that are in the TRACE catalog, but we, in fact, go beyond that and include these other kinds of programs because that infrastructure is there, and if people are comfortable with having an expansion of that, I don't want to reinvent that wheel. In fact,
yeah,
I mean, at one time, I worked on creating a database of major projects around climate change, and then TRACE came on and was doing it much better than I could do on my own. And go for it, folks! You know,
yeah.
And I don't think we want to reinvent something or some, you know, a group that has already thought through the metadata well. So.
Sure. So,
good.
But I mean, I think, as far as I can tell, when we talk about this, there are 5 major modalities that are out there, K-12 and so on. There's sub-focuses that we have in the TRACE catalog. Why don't we, I don't know who the right person to engage in our community or the right team of people to kind of begin to populate this, but, you know, I'm willing to nudge this forward. You know, Bonnie and Scott, I've only heard the two of you, so maybe it's just 3 of us today. But, is this something that, what's that?
Well, I think Debbie was on too, so.
Oh, I'm still here. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Hey. But, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, this is something a Google Doc could totally start.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I see paths of using this beyond this conversation, that's for sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So is there a place that you see that I could start that work with Trace, because certainly Trace is something, as the manager of the Trace catalog, Trace is something that I can start with.
That's what I thought.
So is there something you see that I could start with within Trace, Frank?
Yeah, I would think if we took one catalog record, right, one project, and we just transferred over all the fields from that project into a Google Doc, right, so that all the things that describe that project that are there, that's, say, K-12 focused, or it doesn't really matter. And then we kind of take a look at that, and then we start using the fields for a wider purpose and seeing what's missing, and then socialize that with other leaders in the field and some of the funders. This is totally in line with some of the tri-agency conversations we've had over the years. I remember going back years in the Trace catalog conversations about this exact purpose, but we've never actually gotten it off the ground. And I know, Bonnie, I think that maybe don't we have a tri-agency call later today?
We do, and at this point we're going to run into it,
So maybe we just raise it there and see. I'm going to be there, so maybe we raise it there. What time is that call?
It's at 3 p.m.
Yeah, so why don't we raise it there
and
see if
that's... Which is your Eastern as well.
Yeah. Do you like that idea, Bonnie?
Right. I do. I think that we're going to need to tackle something else, Frank, that we've tackled several times too, which is that we need to broaden the funding source for Trace. Right now, the entire catalog has been built with NASA funds, and I know you know that, but we're going to need to broaden it. We're probably going to need to broaden that base as well.
Absolutely. But this is one of those what are the key priority funding tasks, our community,
right.
And then we have to figure out how to get these things done. One possible way is is transferring it to something like the Clean Network and letting them take it over and maintain it with non-federal funds. That's one crazy idea, but those funds don't exist, or finding funds in the federal space, and it's you guys have ponied up, and NSF and NASA have yet to take it on, and maybe Department of Energy can take it on for a little while because they want to get more energy in there. Who knows? I think it's just like it's signaling a task and then focusing on it until that task is done.
Is
important. So I'm with you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm comfortable with that, Bonnie. We can raise it in the 3 o'clock meeting and see if we can get some traction and support.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. It's actually on the agenda.
Is that cool, Scott?
So, it's on the agenda this afternoon, Frank. So they're ahead of our game.
I love it. Well, folks, it's well after the top of the hour. So let's wrap for now. There is a recording of this, so we haven't lost anything at all. And I think this is a really interesting thing for us to tackle. For all kinds of good reasons. Yeah,
it's concrete.
Good.
Absolutely.
Yes, very mm-hmm. We have the right people on right now. Well, thanks for everyone. And what's the next week? Actually, Mark McCaffrey is going to talk about his new book on clean and various other things. So hopefully the four of us turn up, or there's others that we haven't heard from today. Join us next week. So thanks again for everyone.
Thanks very much.
Scott.
Okay, that's great.
Thanks very much as well. Great discussion.
Good, it was.